Hello, folks. This is Steve with the Legacy Podcast, helping you build a multi-generational legacy of abundance. This is episode 3, and we've got a good show for you planned today, and hopefully you'll be able to get some good information from it. We're going to be talking about building a wealth plan, steps necessary in order to build wealth for you and your family for generations to come. I'm going to kind of walk you through that. You're going to want to go to the website, which is thelegacypodcast.net, and get the wealth building plan diagram under the document section. I'm also going to put it in the show notes, so you'll be able to have it there, but you want to follow along with that, and that will be able to show you where we're going on this. And also, I do want you to continue to look at the website. We're adding new stuff on a regular basis, and you can keep abreast of the new information and what's going on. Register there while you're there for our email list. And also, I would encourage you, if you like the show and you want to see more of this and want to help support the show, then to consider becoming a Legacy Partner and charging $30 a year for that. And it comes out to be only about 25 cents an episode. So well worth it, and the value of it's going to continue to increase as we get more traffic and as we continue to grow the podcast. So that takes care of the introductory segment for today. So let's go ahead and get into the wealth building plan. When you're building any kind of building, you want to make sure that you're building it to last. And so you have a good foundation, a good firm foundation. And one of the most long-lasting of all buildings are the pyramids in Egypt. They've been around for thousands of years. And so when we look at a wealth-building plan, I have designed this as a pyramid to show the strength of such a plan and the way in which it is able to last for generations to come. And so obviously one of the key principles of building a lasting legacy, a legacy of abundance financially, is to be able to learn about money and have a plan so that you can use your money wisely. And so that's what we're going to talk about today. And the first step in any good financial game plan is spending less than you make. This is the wealth building tool. Your income is your greatest wealth building tool. And if you are spending all of your income and don't have anything set aside for the future, you're not taking advantage of your greatest asset. And so you have to spend less than you make. Really, there should be about a 20% margin between what you bring in and what you spend out. And that 20% can be used for building assets and growing your wealth and developing your legacy financially. And so you got to spend less than you make. Sometimes this is hard. Congress hasn't figured it out, obviously. They continue to spend more than they make, and as a society, we have become more and more spenders and less savers. In fact, in some places around the country, there's a negative savings rate, which means that we're actually spending more than we bring in, and that obviously is not a trend that builds abundance and certainly cannot be passed on from one generation to the next. It is only a recipe for continued generational poverty. And that's not what we want. We want to build a legacy of wealth and a legacy in so many ways. And so we need to be able to spend less than we make. We need to have a budget so that we can know where our money's going, where it's not going, and be able to use that in a wise way. So spending less than you make, that's the first step. Number two is you need to protect your assets with insurance. Really, what insurance is, it is a transferring risk from you to a pool of people, and it benefits the person purchasing the insurance because they know that if a tragedy happens and they lose that asset, that it can be replaced through the insurance company. It benefits the insurance company because they know that they are taking the risk, and they are they know that they don't have all the risk because they know that in the pool of people that they have, there'll be some that do not have the accident, do not lose the asset, and so don't have to recover it. So it is really a program that is a win-win for everybody. And there are various types of insurance that you need in a good, healthy plan. One, of course, is health insurance, life insurance, auto insurance, home insurance, disability insurance, and long-term care insurance. Those are the main ones, and obviously you need some of those at various times, and hopefully you don't need to use some of them, and yet they need to be in place. And I'm going to do shows on each of these in coming episodes, but for now I just want to kind of cover a couple of them in a little bit more detail. And the first one is health insurance, and you know, you'd have to be from Mars not to realize that health insurance has been an issue for a couple of years now, and actually prior to that. And with the Obama healthcare program, we even know that right now in the news, there is some debate as to whether or not the Supreme Court is going to disregard what Obama has planned with the required mandate for people to purchase insurance. And so we're not sure where that's going, but we certainly know that the government has been involved. And it's interesting to note that when the government gets involved, the prices go up. This is true in so many different ways. If you look at healthcare, it's more expensive than many other kinds of insurance programs because the government's most involved. You look at education, you look at all the various ways in which the government has involved itself in the free market, and all that does is make costs go up. And so the more involved the government becomes in the healthcare, the more expensive it will become and the less of value it will be. And so but nonetheless, we still need health care. We still need to be able to have needs met. And if we have a tragedy and we need to go to the hospital or HeliVac to the hospital or something like that, we don't normally have the resources to cover that. And so there's a need that we have for that. Now, I personally do not have health insurance for my family and for myself. We use what's called Samaritan Ministry. I'll put a link in the show notes to it. What it is it's a Christian sharing ministry where we can share one another's medical bills and provide for the needs of our family in terms of its health care. And it's a great program. We've had several babies on it, accidents, broken arms, all those kinds of things, and we've never not had our the money reimbursed for the various costs that are associated with it. It's not insurance. We do not claim that it's insurance, and yet it's Christians sharing one another's medical bills, and really the way that the Bible says that we should do. And so I really support the Samaritan's ministry. If you're a Christian and you want to consider being a part of that, that would be great. I will put a link, of course, in the show notes for that. So that's health insurance. Life insurance, obviously, we know that is a way by which we can provide income for our families after we have passed, or your spouse has passed, if she's got insurance or he's got insurance, and so it is a way to replace lost income. Same thing with disability. One would be lost through disability, one would be lost through death, and both of them are essential. And when it comes to life insurance, of course, I'm going to have a whole episode on this, but you really want to have term insurance. Term insurance, of course, is the least expensive. It is the best value out there, and most agents will try to sell you whole life or variable life or universal flexible premium life, all the different terms out there. They're all cash value programs, and they're really lousy. There may be times where you're really wealthy and you may need a product like that, but for the most part, most everybody just needs term life insurance and disability insurance. And then long-term care insurance is more for people who, as they move themselves up the various wealth steps here, and they get to a point in their life where they've amassed some amount of wealth and they are aging, that's when you really need long-term care insurance. You don't need it when you're young. So that's something that comes a little bit later. The third step in the financial game plan is to save $1,000. This is what I consider the stay-out-of-debt plan, stay-out-of-debt fund. What it is a mini-emergency fund. It is in case the car's tires go out or the alternator goes out or something like that, and you need to get it replaced. If you don't have any money in the bank, you end up putting it on the credit card or taking out some kind of payday loan. That would be the worst thing possible. I think the payday loan people ought to go, well, I don't say they got a business, they have a right to be out of business, but I don't think anybody ought to give them their business. It's a horrible program. And so we don't want to go into debt. We need to have $1,000 emergency fund, mini emergency fund set aside for us in case of emergency. That's the bare minimum. Now, if you're listening to this program and you don't have $1,000 set away, that you need to get that done ASAP. You need to have that done this month. If it requires selling something, if it requires having a garage sale, you need to do whatever you can to have $1,000 in the bank immediately, because that is so important. So that's the stay out of debt fund, $1,000. Number four is to acquire a will, power of attorney, and advanced medical directive. These are important documents when it comes to your estate. And obviously, when we're talking about building a legacy, what good is it if we build this legacy but we can't pass it on? And, you know, when we talk about a legacy of faith, we want to pass on our faith. When we talk about a legacy of freedom, we want to pass on the freedom and the liberties that we have and that we have been able to maintain or regain. And when it comes to wealth, we want to be able to pass on our wealth. And if we don't have a will, advanced medical director, or power of attorney, we are not able to do that. And so this is an important document. Now, obviously, as we get more and more wealth and our wealth increases, then we need to be able to access other resources like trusts and things like that. But for most people, when they're starting out, a will is what is necessary. Now, in most places across the country, if you do not have a will, then the state will determine where your property goes and where your underage children go to have a guardian and those kinds of things. And we don't want the state deciding for us where things ought to be or what ought to happen. So we want to be able to decide those things for ourselves. The way that you do that is that you have a properly executed will. I'll have a link in the show notes as to the, I think, the most reasonable place you can go to on the internet to get that. And hopefully you'll be able to find that helpful. And if you don't have your will in place, to get a will for you and your wife, it'll be less than $100, and you just need to take care of that. So acquire a will, power of attorney, and advanced medical directive. Number five is to eliminate consumer debt. Now, the Bible is very clear that debt is a curse. Now, I understand that sometimes we get into situations where we look back on and we say we shouldn't have done that, but now we're in the debt and we need to get out. And it's an important step for us to be able to eliminate that consumer debt. Now, the best way that I know of being able to do that is doing what's called the debt snowball. Dave Ramsey, of course, made this famous, and I'll have a link in the show notes to his program. But it is a way by which you can pay off the debts with the most reasonable success. And the reason I say that is it's designed so that you can have some victories. You list your smallest to largest debts in that order so that as you begin to work your way down that list, you start seeing some victories. You pay off the littlest one first, and then you pay off the next littlest one and so forth until that snowball payment gets bigger and bigger. And so you start wiping out larger and larger chunks of your debt, and it enables you to get out of debt fast. Now, if you don't want to use that program, use something, but you need to get out of debt. This is so vitally important. We cannot have debt and be abundant and cannot live in abundancy and pass on that abundancy. And so we need to be able to eliminate that consumer debt. Most important is stop borrowing. We cannot borrow our way out of debt. We cannot continue to dig the hole we're trying to dig ourselves out of. And so we need to make a decision to no longer borrow and to save up for the things that we need. Really, getting out of debt is not so much the plan that you choose, whether you choose to use the snowball plan or something else. And I'll have a link to a program that's similar to the snowball plan that you can access. But whether you use that program or a different program, it's really a decision that you make based on emotion. In other words, you have to decide, I'm no longer going to be a slave to debt. I'm no longer going to allow myself to be a consumer. I am going to take charge of these things, and I'm going to be able to eliminate my debt and start living freely once again. And it's a decision you have to make. You have to get mad at debt. You have to no longer decide you're going to live in bondage and debt and get rid of it. And so that's step number five. Step number six is a short-term savings. This would be an extension of the $1,000 fund, and this would extend out to 3 to 6 to even 12 months of income, paycheck, expenses, however you want to look at it. but it's a little bit of reserve set aside in case hard times come, whether you lose your job, whether there's a sickness or a disability, and your insurance doesn't cover it, something like that. This is where your emergency fund would come in. It's protection funds, emergency funds, and large purchase funds. This would also be where you save up for that car. If you know you've got something that's coming in the future that you need to pay for, whether it be a car or whether it be upgrades to the house, a new roof, something like that, you don't want to go into debt for those things, so you have to save up for them. And a short-term savings account is where you would want to do that. And then also one thing to be considerate of when it comes to this is purchasing power. And you know, I've mentioned before you need to have this much money in your savings account, but if you put money in a savings account, I think a savings account right now is like 0.25% interest rate or something like that. If you get a CD, it's like a 1% or something. I mean, it's crazy. The interest rates are so low, and it's you actually end up making negative money because when you consider the interest rates and then consider the inflation, and the government's inflation rate of 2% is bogus. That's not 2% interest rates. Our inflation rate is far greater than that. The CPI has been cooked up and booked up by the Federal Reserve and Congress, and it doesn't report really what the inflation rate is. If you go to the grocery store, you realize food's going up greater than 2%, what the CPI supposedly is. You realize that if you go to the gas pump, gas has gone up, oil's gone up. Everything that we consume and that we use on a regular basis is going up. So I don't know how in the world they can claim it's 2%. They take out everything that's going up and then they say it's 2%. It's ridiculous. So it's a lot higher than 2%. So when you put your money into the bank at 1% or 0.5% and inflation's at 6%, you're losing your money. And so it's important that you realize that. And if you're okay with that, that's fine. But if you want to be able to overcome some of that and be able to set aside a little bit more and preserve your money, then I would consider using some precious metals, silver and gold. Silver is really nice because I think that the ratio between it and gold right now is out of whack, and that you'll get a better gain on the silver than you will for the gold. But regardless, silver is nice because you can buy it in smaller portions. And so if you've got a little bit each month you can set aside to save, you can go to a local coin shop and just buy some bullion coins. Silver coins, set them aside. They're harder to spend, so you're less likely to spend them and put them away. And it works out pretty good because you preserve your purchasing power that way, and you can later on redeem them for currency, or what our federal government calls currency. And that will enable you to keep your purchasing power as well as to save up for the emergency and do what you need to do with that regard. So short-term savings. Number 7 is increased giving. Now, we should be giving through the whole program. There's not a time at which we should not be giving. We should be giving, according to the scriptures, at least 10%, maybe even more than that. Now, I know that we give to some of the things that the Bible requires us give through government taxes, but that's not giving in the sense of a generous heart. And so we need to be giving all the way through it. But now, at this point, we get to a place where we can actually really start to give more abundantly. And one of the best ways in which we can experience abundant life in this life is being able to pass on some of the blessings God's given to us to other people and the needs that they might have, and to be able to share that blessings. And one of my prayers is that God would bless me, that I might be a blessing to others, just as Abraham was when God promised him that he would be a blessing and that through him many nations might be blessed. And so as we gain some measure of wealth, we need to be diligent in giving some of that wealth away. And at this stage, after we have developed this emergency fund, this short-term savings account, we've no longer have any consumer debt, we've got our will and our power of attorney, advanced medical directives in place, we've saved a little bit of money, we've protected our assets with wealth, we're spending less than we make, we've got a 20% margin. Now we can really begin to start giving. So let's suppose there's somebody in our church who has wanted to have children and has been unable to. For some reason, God has not blessed them with children, and they want to be able to have a legacy that they can pass on from one generation to the next. They want to do as we desire to do here on this podcast and this show. We want to be able to pass on a legacy, and so they want to do that, but they don't have any children, so they want to adopt. And they look into adoption, it's $15,000, $20,000 to adopt, and they don't have that kind of money, so they they are raising money, and they come to the church and they ask the church to be in prayer for them as they raise this money. Wouldn't it be great if you had some money set aside and you can go up to them and say, look, I know you probably need $15,000, $20,000, but here's $5,000. Won't that be great? Well, that's what God's people should be doing. That's what the church should be stepping up to do, to be able to give to needs like that and be able to provide for that. But we can't do that if we're in debt. We can't do that if we don't have any money saved ourselves. We can't do that if we don't have insurances in place and the things necessary to be in place. So each of these steps work out in their own order perfectly to be able to accomplish what we need to have accomplished. And so increased giving, that's a vital step. Number 8 is investments. Now, when it comes to investments, there's a lot of different theories out there as to what should be done with your investments. Let me say, I'm going to explain what is typical advice out there by financial advisors and investment advisors and that kind of thing. But I also want to just take a step back and say that when it comes to investing, the best thing that you can invest in is yourself. That is, improving your skills, improving your ability, investing in your business. So if you're self-employed or you have a business, the best thing you can do is invest in that business, whether it be through marketing or whether it be through new equipment or whether it be through... Now, you need to be wise in that. You can't just say, well, rather than investing for the retirement, I'm going to buy myself a brand new truck or something like that. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that we need to invest in things that we can control ourselves before we start sending our money to the markets and things like that that we can't really control. And so we need to invest most importantly in ourselves, in our own businesses, and that kind of thing. But then secondly, we want to start investing in long-term asset accumulation. Now, what I mean by that is there are several things that we would want to be able to set aside for investment-wise. And one thing, of course, that most people think about when it comes to investments is investing for retirement. You can turn on the television, you can see all these different commercials for retirement and, you know, all these different companies are advertising that they can be able to get you to a certain number at a certain time, and you can be able to retire on the beach and walk with your wife and all these kinds of things. But the Bible is very clear that we are never to really stop working, particularly as it comes to working for the Lord. And so retirement in the concept of the American ideal that we are to set aside money into 401k so that at 59 and a half we can start pulling off that 401k and we can retire for 30 years and go down to Florida and live in our beach house and play golf every day. And I mean, that's just crazy. That's not what we were designed here to be. That might be abundant for you, but it's not passing on any kind of legacy for your children, for your grandchildren, for the world at large and that will come on after us. And so we need to continue to invest our lives in the people and invest our lives in the kingdom of God, invest our lives in the things that will amount in the future. And so when it comes to investments, when I talk about investing long term, it is important that we get to a point in our life, not so that we can go and retire and never have to work again, but so that if we choose, we can work without having to be compensated for it. Now, it may be that you can be compensated for your work all the way up into your 80s and 90s, and if that's you, that's great. But it'd be nice to be able to get to a point in our life where we have enough passive income coming in off of our investments so that we would no longer have to work if we don't want to. We would be allowed to be free at that point, financially independent. And that really should be our goal, not so that we can go and spend it all on leisure, but so that we can invest our time in other ways where we wouldn't have to see a compensation for it. And so I do believe that we need to be investing. We do need to be investing for the future, but for a totally different purpose. So how do we do that? Well, traditionally, if you talk to most financial advisors, they will tell you to put all your money into a 401k and sock it away, put it into a well-balanced, diverse portfolio, and keep it there, let it sit over the years, and 30, 40 years down the road, presto, you'll be millions of dollars wealthier, and you'll be good to go. Well, that's advice that's not bad in itself, but there's certainly some better advice that you can get with that. Now, there is obviously many people are familiar with 401ks, and 401ks, the way that they work is often they are set up in companies, corporations, where they will give you a match. That is, maybe they might give you a 50-50 match if you put in, they'll put in as much as you put in, or half as much. So if you put in 10%, they'll put in 5% up to a certain max, maybe a 7% max or something like that. And so they're able to match what you put in to a certain level. And the benefit of that is it's free money. I mean, let's suppose that you put in $400 a month into your 401k, and the company matches a 50% match. They put in $200 a month. So now you put in $600 combined, $400 and the $200. But really what that ends up doing is that ends up giving you a huge percent increase that you didn't even make. It's free money. Now, we know that if they didn't pay that to you, or if they didn't pay it to your 401k as a contribution, they could pay it out in wages or salary. And so, you know, it's a negotiated item within your contract with the place that you work or whatever. But certainly, you never want to give up free money like that. And so if your company matches your contributions to your 401k, you want to max that out. And so if they match it 50 cents on the dollar up until 5%, then you want to go 5% so that you might get the max of the match. But secondly, once you've maxed the match, or if your company doesn't have a matching program, then what you want to do is you want to set up a Roth IRA. Now, of course, this again is for the money that you're going to be setting aside for retirement when you are 59 and a half or older, and you can start drawing that off without penalties. But let me talk first about why you wouldn't want to put all of your investments into retirement programs that are regulated under the federal government that are considered qualified plans, like the 401k and the 403b, which is like the 401k only for healthcare professionals and hospitals, dentists, and organizations that are nonprofits, things like that. And so it works similarly. But whether it's a 401k or a 403b or a traditional IRA or Roth IRA, those are tax qualified, or they have special tax benefits to them, and so they are regulated under the IRS and certain things. Now, we don't know what the future holds for us as a country. We certainly know that we're in trouble financially and economically in our nation, and so we cannot be guaranteed that the Congress will not someday in the future take away these tax benefits, knowing that there's a lot of resources and money available to them if they were to take away the advantage that these tax programs have. And so one of the reasons why we don't want to put all of our money into it is we don't know what's going to happen in the future with that regard. But the other reason we want to do that is that we have some more flexibility. We don't want to put all of our money into something like a 401k or a 403b or a Roth IRA, traditional IRA, whatever it might be. We don't want to put all of our money in there because we want to have some flexibility to our money. We want to be able to have some money in case we acquire enough wealth that at 45 we can retire. And now there are some ways around it. There's the 72T rule and things like that where you can start to take the money out before you turn 59 and a half without penalty, but it's kind of complicated and it rarely happens. But if you have enough money accumulated outside of your retirement programs to where you can start having some passive money coming in, and enough to where you wouldn't have to work quite as hard and wouldn't have to take penalties and all kinds of taxes on the money as it comes out, then why not do that? And so I advocate not all of your long-term investments should go to a tax-qualified plan. Part of it should go to non-tax-qualified plans, regular investments. But why would you want to set up a Roth versus a traditional IRA? Now, there is some difference here. Obviously, the traditional IRA works very similar to a 401k. That is that the money grows tax-deferred. So you get some tax benefit when you put the money in because the money you put in is reduced from your income, and so you are not taxed at as high an amount as if that money was counted towards your income. So there's one advantage there. But a Roth IRA, you don't get any tax advantage up front. So the money you put in there, you've already paid taxes on. But the money you take out is totally tax-free. So let's suppose you put $70,000, $80,000, $100,000 into your Roth IRA over the 30 years, and now it's grown to be $2 million. Well, you paid the taxes on $100,000, but the $2 million that you take out from, tax-free. Now, again, we don't know what Congress is going to do with this, whether they're going to continue to keep this as a program, whether they're going to continue to have the advantages that they have listed in the IRS rules. But right now, they're great for the Roth IRA. And so if you're able to access those, that'd be great. Now, there are some times where you can even have a Roth 401k at work. And if that's the case, you need to take advantage of that as well. And so here we have the 401k and the Roth IRA, and we have the traditional IRA. Now, there are other retirement programs out there. There are annuities that you can have that work similarly to a traditional IRA in the sense that money is tax deferred and it can grow without having to pay taxes on it as it grows, but they're a little bit more restrictive as to what you can do with the money, where you can put the money and things of that nature, and a little bit more technical than what we're going to do on this initial program. But we do want to be investing our money. Now, what else can we invest for long term? Well, if you're planning on sending your children to college, you need to be able to provide for them that so that they're not coming out with student debt. Now, let me just say for a moment, I have heard so many stories recently about students who are getting out of college $50,000, $60,000, $100,000, $200,000 in debt with some useless degree. Maybe it's a sociology degree or a psychology degree or some stupid thing where they're not going to be able to use that degree for anything. Now, I got a degree in history and geography from Virginia Tech. And unless I was going to become a teacher or something like that, that degree is worth maybe a couple thousand dollars. But I spent thousands of dollars to go get it, and tuition has gone up significantly since I went to school. And so it's just ridiculous if you think your kids are going to go to school, and especially if you're planning on sending your kids to school and they don't know what they want to do yet, they're going in general studies to some private school or something. Well, that's just crazy. That is a waste of resources. It's a waste of the money that God has entrusted to you, and it's no way to build abundance. Now, I probably just made a bunch of people mad, but so what? And we need to be able to be sure that we are using our money wisely, and we are wasting our money when we're sending our kids to school, even if it's a inexpensive school, without really knowing what they're going to do and whether that degree is going to translate into income potential. So I'm not opposed to people going and getting degrees, but I think that there are far too many kids that are going and getting degrees and just so they can have a degree. And now they're coming back home to live with their parents because they can't find a job. I would much prefer somebody going and getting a job for 4 years rather than going to school for 4 years. And that way they might be able to learn something while they go and develop some skills in the workplace as they go. And so those are some things you want to be investing in. Now, one of the things you need to learn about with investing is the rule of 72. The rule of 72 is an investment rule that basically tells you how quickly your money is going to double based on the rate of return that you get. So if you get, let's say, a 1% rate of return when you put your money into a CD at the bank, it's going to take you 72 years before that, let's say, $1,000 you put into the CD becomes $2,000. And of course, in that 72 years, what do you think the money is going to be worth after 72 years? That $2,000 is going to be worth about 20 cents with the way the inflation rate's going. And so you need to get a better return than that. So if you take 6 into 72, of course, that comes out to be 12 years. So your money's going to double every 12 years. And 6 into 72, or 12 into 72 is 6. So every 6 years, your money's going to double. Now, this is important because it can work either for you or against you, the way the compounding works. And that's just basically a compounding rule, the rule of 72. But it helps to be able to tell, okay, well, I've got $50,000 in the bank now or into investments now. What will it be worth in so many years if I don't contribute to it? And if I get a 12% rate of return, what's it going to be worth? And so it's just a simple way of calculating how much you should have put away. Now, how much should you have put away? That's a good question. Well, really, you should have about, I think the best number to calculate for this is 15 times the income that you need. So let's say that you need $40,000 a year in today's dollars or we'll just do $50,000 a year in today's dollars to be able to live the way that you want to live and the lifestyle that you have currently. Well, that would mean that you need to have $750,000 saved. So that would be 15 times in today's dollars. Now, obviously, in future dollars, that's going to have to be different. But the way that you calculate that is that you can draw off then, if you have 15 times your income that you need invested, you can draw 6% of that and get 90% of your current income. And then the rest that you would gain in addition to the 6% would go to fight off the inflation rate. Now, we should not assume, just as I mentioned earlier, we should not assume the inflation rate is 2%. That's ridiculous. The inflation rate is much higher than that. Many calculations have it now at 10 to 12%. And so the inflation is far greater than 2%. We need to take that into consideration when we're doing our investments. Even the stock market, some people say this last year the stock market went up. Great, well, the stock market went up 12%, 15%. Yeah, well, what did the inflation rate do? If the inflation rate was 10% and only went up 12%, that's only a 2% rate of return on your money. And so it's critical that you calculate that in and take into consideration the inflation when you do that. But if you have a 6% rate of return that you draw off of that and then you have inflation of, let's say, 6%, then you would need to get a 12% return in order to calculate that out. So that's a very average solution. Now, you may need more than that, and you may need 20% of what you need, but 15% will get you started in the right direction. And that will give you kind of a ballpark figure of where you should be. So that pretty much takes care of investments. Now, the next step would be paying off your house early. Now, you might have already completed that by the time you get to this step, but if not, then you want to make sure that you do that here. Now, a lot of people want to be able to do all of these things at one time. They want to be able to pay off their consumer debt. They want to be able to pay down their home debt. They want to be able to invest for their retirement, to put money away for emergency funds, save up for the new car, put their kids into college, be able to acquire these different things. And they want to be able to do all of them at one time. And what ends up happening is they don't do any of them very good. There is a power and an intensity to focus. And so it's very important that you get a focus when it comes to paying off your house or doing any one of these steps. And as you walk yourself through these various steps, it then enables you to be able to have that power of focus working on each step. And so when you get to the step of paying off your house, if you haven't already done that, now is where you put any additional money that you're not putting away in the other steps. You put that away on your house and pay it off soon. Now, there will be some financial advisors out there who will say you should always have a mortgage, especially when the interest rates are as low as they are. I mean, you think about it right now, you can get a mortgage, 30-year mortgage for 4%, sometimes even less than that. I mean, that's ridiculous. I mean, especially when you consider the inflation rates, 6, 10, 10%, something like that, you're actually getting a mortgage at less than the inflation rate. But that's artificial. That's not what the real rate should be. It's going to only result in bank failures in the future and economic collapse. And, of course, we'll get into that into another episode. But for right now, just know that after you start really investing for retirement, the next step would be to pay down your house, pay it off as soon as you can. There's something about owning your own home that gives you some satisfaction. Even if you could make a little bit more in the market somewhere else, the risk is really outweighed by the fact that you have no more bills. You can call the home your own. No longer are you paying Citibank or American or Bank of America or Chase or any of these companies. And what a great feeling that is to be totally and completely out of debt. And that's really where we should all be, to be able to leave a legacy, is to be able to be completely and totally out of debt. And we can do that. And then the final step, of course, is to build a wealth legacy, to build enough assets, to build enough financial strength that you can have a legacy that you can pass on from generations to come. Have you ever wondered why it was that, you know, the Rockefellers and the, you know, the huge money tycoons continue to keep money even though their families are all messed up and destroyed? Well, it's because they've built such an abundance of wealth that they're able to maintain that wealth. Now, eventually, the wealth of the sinner is stored up for the righteous, and it will be transferred over. We don't know when that will be, but the Lord will take care of that as He does. And so the last step, of course, is building a wealth legacy. Now, what can you do at this stage with your money? There's really only four things you can do. One is you can continue to make it grow, which you should. It's your responsibility to be able to use the things that God has given to you for glory. And I think one of the ways in which we can use what he's given to us for glory is to increase what he's given to us. And so there's nothing wrong with continuing to make your money grow for you at this stage in life, and you really should. Using the same principles that got you there, you use those same principles to make your money continue to grow. But another thing you should do with your money at this stage, of course, is give it. Here you can start determining through wills and other kinds of estate planning tools, trusts, what you're going to do with that money when you pass. How are you going to leave a legacy, a financial legacy for generations to come? What are you going to do to be able to pass this money on from one to the next? And it may be that you're donating some of it to charity. It may be that your children are preparing for it. And let me just say, before we get any further with this, that if we're not teaching, I'll have a whole other segment on this probably, but if we're not teaching our children about money and we're expecting ourselves to be wealthy, then we're not going to be able to pass on any kind of legacy of wealth, because once it goes to them, they'll have it gone in no time. And so along with the money that we are accumulating, the wealth that we would accumulate, we need to make sure that with that we're also providing an education to the children so that when they receive this money, they'll know what to do with it, and it can maintain for generations to come a wealth for the family. And so there's a need to give the money. And by giving, you can give that through trust. You can give it while you're alive and see what it's used for. Now you can really start providing for it far more than you could back in one of the earlier steps of giving. Now you can really start giving with your money, and what a great blessing that is. The third thing that you can do with it is, of course, you need to protect your money. You need to make sure the tax man is not going to take it all. And, you know, there's inheritance taxes you have to deal with, and there's all kinds of other taxes that they'll want to get from your money when you start drawing it off, and capital gains and all these kinds of things. You need to be aware of that and have a plan in place so that the IRS and others who would want to take your money do not have the opportunity to do so, or at least we can limit their opportunity to do so. So we can grow it, we can protect it, which we should, we can give it, and then finally we can enjoy it. I believe that it is important for us to be able to enjoy the blessings God has given to us. And there is nothing wrong once we have accumulated a certain amount of abundance, a certain amount of prosperity, a certain amount of wealth, to be able to enjoy that with our family or with our friends or however we decide to do that. And what a great way to be able to use our money. But it should not be the only way, certainly, or we will be running out of our money. And so we should leave a legacy that can be passed on from generation to generation of being able to do these four things: protecting your money, being able to grow your money, being able to pass on your money, give your money, and then be able to enjoy your money. So those are the steps to gaining a financial wealth, to gaining the legacy, a financial plan, and hopefully you'll be able to implement some of these and walk yourself through these different steps. If you have any questions or you want feedback or some clarification on any of those, you can reach me at feedback@thelegacypodcast.net. Again, that's feedback@thelegacypodcast.net. Or you can put a comment. If it's not a personal matter, you can put a comment next to the podcast on the website, and I'll be able to answer from your comment the question that you have. Hopefully this gets you started and gets you on your way to building a financial legacy. And with that, this has been episode 3 of the Legacy Podcast, helping you build a multi-generational legacy of abundance. What will you do today to build your legacy? Someone to believe.